Hello, and welcome to Roy Orbison Jr.'s Rock and Roll Circus Podcast. I'm Roy Orbison Jr. This is part three of the Soul of Rock and Roll series of podcasts that I'm doing. Today, we'll continue where we left off last time, telling Roy's story into the 80s. I'll read Barbara's introduction, then I'll give some thank yous and some personal observations on producing the Soul of Rock and Roll. So let's get started. When Roy would say, "Barbara saved my life," in interviews, everyone knew he meant it literally. In Barbara, he had found what he was looking for, the once-in-a-lifetime soulmate love that only happens in dreams. In his live shows, Orbison always had a few extra rockers to add to his ballad-heavy string of hits. Land of a Thousand Dances, from a 1972 show in Australia, is a good example, recorded with his backing band of the time, the Art Movement. In the 1970s, Roy poured his energy into his family. With his parents, surviving son Wesley K. Orbison, and two new sons, Roy Jr. and Alex Orby Orbison, Roy and Barbara found fun in life again. Even during his lost years, Orbison was still quite active, winning a Grammy Award for his duet with Emmylou Harris, That Loving You Feeling Again, touring with Eagles in 1978, doing benefits like Farm Aid, and appearing on the Dukes of Hazzard with Daisy Duke. Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, Johnny Cash, and Roy Orbison got together one last time. The album was called Homecoming, and what a glorious reunion it was. Carl Perkins gave the best vocal performances of his career. Johnny wrote his best lyrics. Jerry was still wild, and Roy Orbison was still emotional. The songs somehow sound better today than the day they were released in 1985. Roy's solo song, Coming Home, contains a spiritual quality. A picture was taken at Sun of Carl, Johnny, Jerry Lee, and Elvis, and dubbed the Million Dollar Quartet. It would have been the Million Dollar Quintet, except that Roy was in Texas at the time. The name the Million Dollar Quartet was considered for the reunion band, but out of respect for Elvis, they called themselves the Class of 55. Along with the death of Elvis Presley, Class of 55 was the end of the beginning of rock and roll. The songs conjure up these friends as a big train from Memphis, with Elvis as the engine in the front, with Carl the next boxcar, Johnny the next, Roy the next, all the other cool cats from Sun next, and Jerry Lee as the caboose to tear the whole thing down. The passage of time shows just how special that train would prove to be. In the movie Blue Velvet, director David Lynch pointed out the darkness inherent in any Roy Orbison song. In this case, it's the beautiful song In Dreams, reimagined as a nightmare. Lynch also made a Spanish version of Crying called Llorando, the set piece for his movie Mulholland Drive. There never was a band that had more fun than the Traveling Wilburys. Like a musical version of Monty Python, Nelson Wilbury, Otis Wilbury, Lefty Wilbury, Lucky Wilbury, and Charlie T. Jr. humbly made music history, notably by actually making great music. George Harrison had befriended Roy when the Beatles were the supporting act on the English leg of Roy Orbison's 1963 world tour. That friendship came back full circle when Tom Petty, who was working with Orbison on various projects, the Heartbreakers are all over the Mystery Girl album, and Jeff Lynne of the Electric Light Orchestra, Roy's trusted friend and co-producer, and Bob Dylan, the best lyricist ever among other things, formed the Dream Band. George Harrison was only in two bands for all he achieved in his mighty career. George is still a Beatle, and he is still a Wilbury. Thy Wilbury done. Roy's spotlight song on the Traveling Wilburys album, Not Alone Anymore, is one of his best vocals. It soars like an angel. You Got It is so catchy, it's almost not fair to the listener. It's like one big chorus. You can hear how big Roy's love was by the conviction in his voice. The words of a man who promises the world and can deliver. It's the true life serenade of Roy to Barbara Orbison. When Roy Orbison and Bono worked together, Bono turned out a gem of a song, She's a Mystery to Me. It has a wonderful rhythm and many classic Orbison elements. It sounds like it could be from Orbison's classic Monument period, yet is as modern as what it is, a U2 song with Roy Orbison singing. Roy's life in the 1980s on the beaches of California was his golden period. From his Pacific Ocean front porch, he could see the beauty of the sunset or hear the thunder over Canaan Dune. He always said the sky there has a special color blue. When he was on the road, a certain time of day always made him miss Barbara. He would look up at the sky and wish he was seeing the cloudless blue sky of California. Like a latter-day blue bayou, Roy captured the emotion of longing again with California blue. Roy Orbison and Friends, A Black and White Night, was recorded on audio and filmed on black and white video. No color footage exists. The sounds are vivid enough without it. Great rock and roll guitarist James Burton throws cascades of colorful notes across every song. Alex Acuna and the rest of Elvis TCB band playing with Roy gives the show a holy Elvis quality. Bruce Springsteen, Tom Waits, Jackson Browne, Elvis Costello, Bonnie Raitt, Katie Lang, and T-Bone Burnett turned in heartfelt renditions with a unique chemistry. Orbison worked frequently with the super-talented T-Bone Burnett, who was also the musical director for Black and White Night. On top of all this was Roy himself giving the performance of a lifetime. New songs like All I Can Do Is Dream You burn with the fire of a young man, alongside classics like Oh Pretty Woman. Bruce Springsteen helped Roy many times in many ways. In his early days, Bruce had opened the show for Roy and would later write Roy Orbison singing for the lonely in his song Thunder Road. It was Bruce Springsteen who inducted Roy into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987 with a riveting speech that Roy loved. I'll read that for you now. Bruce Springsteen. In 1970, I rode for 15 hours in the back of a U-Haul truck to open for Roy Orbison at the Nashville Music Fair. It was a summer night, and I was 20 years old. Orbison came out in dark glasses, a dark suit, and he played some dark music. In 1974, just prior to going into the studio to record my album Born to Run, I was looking at Duane Eddy for his guitar sound, and I was listening to a collection of Phil Spector records and Orbison's all-time greatest hits. I'd lay in bed at night with just the lights of my stereo, and I'd hear Crying, Love Hurts, Running Scared, Only the Lonely, and It's Over filling my room. Orbison's voice was unearthly. He had the ability, like all great rock and rollers, to sound like he was dropped in from another planet, and yet get the stuff that was right to the heart of what you were living in today. And that was how he opened up your vision. I carry his records with me when I go on tour today, and I'll always remember what he means to me and what he meant to me when I was young and afraid to love. In 1975, when I went into the studio to record Born to Run, I wanted to make a record with words like Bob Dylan that sounded like Phil Spector's production. But most of all, I wanted to sing like Roy Orbison. Now everybody knows that nobody sings like Roy Orbison. Bruce Springsteen, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Ceremony, January 21, 1987. Springsteen's integrity was well known to Roy, and it was an association and friendship that made Roy very proud. Thank you, Bruce. Right till the end, Roy always liked upbeat rock and roll. Heartbreak Radio could be a song from his Sundays, recorded in the year 2050. It's the same old boogie-woogie in disguise. Jeff Lynne's talents graced I Drove All Night. His deep understanding of music allowed him to match Roy's voice in ways no one else was ever able. Roy could sing flawlessly over anything Jeff played, and Jeff played perfectly behind anything Roy sang. They worked well together, and Jeff added yet another chapter of genius to Roy's life. Roy's last great long-term songwriting collaboration was with fellow Texan Will Jennings. With Will, Roy created his most mature works. The point of view in these songs isn't old, it's ancient. Wild Hearts Run Out of Time was written for a movie about Marilyn Monroe. But the song is so personal, with Roy singing lines about being in the dying of the light and in the sunshine of your mind, that in retrospect it seems autobiographical. It would be a heart attack that claimed him too early in life. Life Fades Away is a spooky song. In the opening lyrics, Roy sings, "My time has come, the clouds are calling. December wind has come my way." Produced by Rick Rubin, the song begs the questions of what great songs the relationship might have yielded. With Orbison, Rick began a new direction in his series of successes. Rick put the song on the soundtrack for the movie Lesson Zero. Seeing Roy and Slayer on the same album is the type of cool factor Rick is so good at. Working with Roy led Rick to Johnny Cash. Roy Orbison was buried December 1988 in the most famous cemetery in the world. His pallbearers were the Traveling Wilburys. The sky was raining. But heroes don't die. Roy Orbison stood alone at 5'11" and cast a long shadow over rock and roll. He never lost a childlike fascination with music and a humility that he was given admiration and money for what he would have done for free anyway. Music was what it was all about. The guitar was his best friend, and together they had a lot of fun. Mercy. As we conclude this series, I'd like to end with the introduction written by my mother, Barbara Orbison. First, I would like to express my deep appreciation and gratitude to everyone who has enabled us to produce this unique collection, which most importantly includes you, Roy's fans. I would like to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you who helped Roy on his journey. He couldn't have done it without you. For the first time ever, you will have a chance to hear Roy's first recording to the last he ever sang, December 4, 1988, in Akron, Ohio. Roy recorded for several different labels and toured the world many, many times. We have numerous unreleased masters and live performances included in this box set to make it truly special. This timeless collection will lend itself to be a study guide in schools so that the children may better understand Roy Orbison, the man and his place in 20th century popular music culture. Those who enjoy this collaboration will learn a little more about Roy and feel an added closeness to his memory. I sincerely hope the selection we have put together reflects the choices you would have made, and I hope we have your favorites. It always astounds me to look at Roy's body of work. He touched so many souls all over the world, making not just fans, but friends, playing everywhere, from the Louisiana Hayride to the Royal Albert Hall, 1950s Sock Hops in West Texas to Saturday Night Live, Top of the Pops to the Johnny Cash TV show, the smallest clubs to Madison Square Gardens. There was a place in the world where he felt safe and loved at the same time, and that was on stage. Whether he had a number one record or was coping with any of the well-reported tragedies in his life, the first thing he did was to book a tour. Roy loved collecting cars by the dozen and was an avid student of history. He designed all of our homes, loved to build and fly model airplanes, and rode Harleys with a passion, long before they became cool. Until our boys, Wesley, Roy Kelton, and Alex, were old enough to ask to ride, and then, as an example to them, he quit. To me, he was my 24/7 husband. I felt he existed only for me. Remember, we got married when I was only 18. And somehow, knowing he had a full and busy life, he had the ability to make me feel like I was the only one that mattered. He was my best friend, my other better half, for 20 years. He was the father who drove the kiddies to school, knew all the teachers and all the kids' friends by name. I'm grateful for the gift he gave our boys daily. They knew him as a father, friend, musician, husband, and ever-evolving human. Although he left them to their own lives so early, they did get to know their dad. I wish they would hand out Grammys for that. Mercy. I am always asked, so what happened to Roy in the 1970s? That's what happened. He was busy being a husband and a dad, touring the world and recording many of the songs that are on this collection, including the duet with Emmylou Harris, That Loving You Feeling Again, which won him a Grammy in 1980. We were friends with the most incredible couples, from June and Johnny Cash to Olivia and George Harrison, as well as Roy's parents, Nadine and Orby Lee Orbison, who was my very best friend. They showed all of us how to be great couples in rock and roll and still maintain a rewarding, successful, life-lasting personal relationship. Roy once said that when he got started, there was no map for rock and roll. With a big smile, he would remember a time in Memphis in 1957 when Elvis and he wondered whether this thing was going to last another 6 months. This thing gave them pink Cadillacs, diamond rings, records on the charts, tours, and screaming girls. Later, the world called it rock and roll. As young rock and rollers, none of them thought they would be on the stage in their 30s. But when Roy was approaching his 50s, he was still loving this thing too much to give it up. One more time, he decided to stretch the limits of rock and roll. He wanted to have a record on the charts, not as a legend, he hated that title, but as a contemporary artist competing with other artists and friends. He wanted to make a record that challenged him on many levels. At that time, to be 50 in rock and roll was to be a dinosaur, an oldie but goodie. Roy wanted to, and did, change that. Being with Roy, I've always been amazed at his courage, faith, and total disregard of any limitations. If he wanted something, he would go for it until he got it. And you got it. With Mystery Girl, Roy attained the rare acclaim of being the only artist other than Elvis to have two simultaneous, posthumously charting albums in the top five, with Mystery Girl and the Traveling Wilburys. Thank you for loving Roy. XOXO, Barbara Orbison, July 2008. That leads me to my first thank you, Barbara Orbison, my beloved mother, who was the executive producer on The Soul of Rock and Roll, and allowed me to work on it with her. It ended up being the highlight of my life and my greatest achievement. It's one of my most cherished memories and times, and it was a wonderful opportunity to really get to know my dad again. That leads naturally to thanking the man himself, Roy Orbison. Thank you, Dad, for leaving us these great songs and these great stories and these great pictures. We love him and miss him very much. Thanks to Nadine and Orby Lee Orbison, Roy's parents, for having him. I'd also like to thank the Sony Legacy team, John Jackson especially, and the designer that helped us make this, the Lataki team. The Soul of Rock and Roll ended up selling hundreds of thousands, and we won a lot of awards for it. One that I won personally is the Addy Award, Addy Gold in 2009, to Roy Orbison Jr. and Sony Legacy for Roy Orbison, The Soul of Rock and Roll box set. The Addy Award is a prestigious award given by the American Advertising Federation, and I'm holding it now. It's a beautiful, heavy crystal award. Thank you very much to them for this beautiful award. I'd also like to thank our current Orbison team, Alex Orbison, Wesley Orbison, Emily Nadine King Orbison, Roy III, Osa Orbison, Erica Orbison, Cameron Davidson, Luke Chalk. The Soul of Rock and Roll ended up being a beautiful package with a white linen cover with a nice texture to it, beautiful pictures of Roy. I could talk for hours about the pictures. Maybe that's a later podcast. After listening to this, if you don't already have The Soul of Rock and Roll, I think you're going to want to get it. You can do that at iTunes or get a physical copy box set at my web store and royorbisonjr.com. Please visit my other sites, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. On YouTube, we'll be doing video logs that correspond to these podcasts. And on royorbisonjr.com, we'll be doing blogs that go along with these podcasts. Subscribe now. Check out my other podcasts on music, the music business, history and trivia, celebrity and guest interviews, and exclusive music and stories. Specific ones you might like are the Black and White Night Concert Podcast, the Led Zeppelin Podcast, the Johnny Cash Podcast, the U2 Podcast, the Traveling Wilburys Podcast, the Sun Records Podcast, the Elvis Podcast, the Royal Philharmonic Podcast, the Fastest Guitar Alive Podcast, the Pretty Woman Podcast, the Roy Orbison Movie Podcast, podcasts on all of those. Thank you very much. It's been my honor to read this and talk to you a little while. Can't wait to do it again. My name is Roy Orbison Jr., your friendly neighborhood rock and roller, and I can't wait to see you again on Roy Orbison Jr.'s Rock and Roll Circus Podcast. Thank you. Thank you.